I am not interested in policing people. I'm not interested in smacking people on the hand when they do things wrong. I would rather that your thoughts and your attitudes led you to inclusive behavior no matter who was watching. How do we create, right, the world where folks don't have to leave any of their identifiers behind, right? How do we create that space? And so we are, when we say our mission is to educate and empower the sports community to eliminate racism, we are really doing it by how do we create that space where folks don't have to leave any of their identifiers behind.
Welcome back to the DEI Podcast. I'm Max Gaston. My guest for today is Diane Billings, CEO of the Ross Initiative in Sports for Equality, better known as RISE. RISE is a national nonprofit that harnesses the unifying power of sports to combat racism and promote social justice across communities in the United States. Before leading RISE, Diane made significant strides as the executive director for cultural investments at Time Warner and as New York City's chief service officer under Mayor Michael Bloomberg, where she mobilized over 1.3 million New Yorkers in volunteer activities. Under her leadership, RISE empowers the sports community to address racial discrimination and improve race relations through education and partnerships. We'll talk about how RISE is using sports as a platform to tackle complex social challenges and explore the intersection of sports and social justice in today's polarized climate. Here is my conversation with Diane Billings. Diane, welcome to the DEI podcast.
Thank you for having me, Max. I'm so excited.
So where I want to start this conversation with you is by having you just give some insight generally on the power of sports to influence social behavior, because I think that that's a big part of what RISE does. And so to me, there's two ways of really looking at the question of how does sports impact us. There's sports as it influences us as viewers, you know, as fans, and the influence that it can play in affecting everything from, you know, the clothes that you wear, to the food you eat, to how you organize your life. You know, some people will set their calendar around different sporting events or different, you know, sports seasons. Even things like who you might vote for in the upcoming presidential election this November, for example. You know, sports can influence all of that for fans. And that's on one hand. But on the other hand, you've got the actual athletes. And we were talking a little bit offline about how RISE works with athletes, not just, you know, in the professional level, but on all levels. And so from that angle, sports can impact things like it can make you more resilient. It can, you know, develop discipline and perseverance. It can make you into a leader. And so considering those dual perspectives, you know, both the influence on fans and the lessons for athletes at all levels, how do you view the role of sports as a vehicle for impacting individual and collective behavior and promoting social change?
Yeah, well, I love the way you frame that, Max. We might also, RISE may steal some of that language because you've articulated two of the main reasons we seek to do this work through sports. I previously had other positions, and I think sports, like the arts, are these human experiences that everyone understands, everyone can connect to. It does have a profound, they can have a profound impact on whoever engages with them. And so at our core, that is one of the reasons why RISE uses sports. We don't think this is the only way to address racism, but we think this is an effective way. And for both of the reasons that you laid out, and our programming is actually built and varies based on those two very distinct impacts that sport is able to have. So for instance, when you talk about the first one, we have a program offering called Champions of Change. It is a fan activation. Spend over $1 million on it a year. It's up at Super Bowl. It was up at Women's Final Four, Men's Final Four. We have a smaller version of it that is at 20 plus events throughout the year. We know that this is our primary way to engage with the fan when they are going to fan events. But our other program offerings and most of our youth programming, for instance, our multi-week leadership programs, most of our work on college campuses, they are taking that population of folks that are engaging in an activity that is teaching them discipline, that is teaching them teamwork. And we are putting on top of that, let's talk about equity. Let's talk about it in this space where you understand you have to work for what's important. Let's talk about it in this space where you do have this base and deep relationship with others that may be different than you. And so that you can have some of these difficult conversations and reach some of these complex conclusions together. And so we see both of those impacts of sport that you mentioned. Going back to Champions of Change, our first area when you walk into Champions of Change is called Road to Progress. It is digital, it is interactive, that part of it, Road to Progress. I love bringing up two dates in history. Sports and social justice in this country have gone hand in hand for over a century. So it is wonderful to see a young person see that Bill Russell hosted one of the first integrated basketball camp in Mississippi, but directly in relation to the assassination of Medgar Evers. It is important for folks to see Catherine Swisher run out and join the Boston Marathon when women were not allowed to run, right? In this day and time where we can't even imagine that women couldn't compete. When we look at the impact, right? We're in the middle of the Olympics. We look at the impact of Simone Biles. We look at the impact of Sha'Carri, right? Sha'Carri Richardson. We probably can't even imagine that there was a time when women literally could not run in a race. And so it is good for folks to see that it is athletes that stepped in and have pushed our country to be more inclusive. And so we believe in sports' ability to do that. We believe in athletes' ability to do that. But we have another huge segment of our programming, probably another $1 million or more, where we are working with folks who are working together on teams and knowing that that is a sweet spot for us getting to difficult issues and you know, helping to develop attitudes.
Diane, given the focus that you were just talking about, how sports and social justice go hand in hand, and how RISE is challenging serious social issues, I want to get your thoughts on some of the current social issues that we're looking at right now, particularly with this upcoming election. So following President Biden's decision not to seek re-election and his endorsement of Vice President Kamala Harris, we see a surge happening of really racist and sexist attacks against Vice President Harris. You know, efforts to undermine her qualifications through coded language, like calling her a DEI candidate or intentionally mispronouncing her name to other her in the eyes of voters. Things like that really showcase some of the deep divisions that are existent in American society today. And we've also, however, on the other side, seen strong support for Vice President Harris with record-breaking small dollar fundraising numbers and endorsements from a lot of high-profile athletes, including Steph Curry and players from the WNBA. What comes to mind for you when you think about the mission of RISE, the deep social fractures in United States society that are driving a lot of the racial and sexist dog whistles that we're hearing from politicians, and all of the things that are at stake in this upcoming election in November?
Yeah, you know, I get a lot of thoughts. One of this is my first reaction is a personal one. I was at Time Warner when AT&T was acquiring the company. And I was debating, what would I do after the sale? I wanted that package. I got the package. And then the question was, what would I do? And I actually had a pretty cushy position set up and decided to come to this role at RISE after I saw a really interesting infographic that it displayed the demographical breakdown of the election of 2016. And the entire map of the United States was blue when people of color voted. And but the map changed by demographic when you took into account different races, levels of college education, gender. And it really, that infographic resonated with me. And I really felt like, okay, I'm going to step into this role because It's not that I thought the infographic demonized anyone or made any one group wrong. It just really highlighted for me this visceral divide in our country. And so I really wanted to be a part of alleviating that. And so when I look at where we are, I'm disconcerted, but not really. I actually think that we are in better position now than we were then. The election of 2020 proved that. We had the highest election turnout in 2020 since we have had since 1900. Mm-hmm. I tell people to think about that. Like, that is something as Americans, I think we should be super proud of. We had some of those same dog whistles, maybe less because we had another white male running for office, but some of those same dog whistles when you're talking about issues, whether it was immigration, when you're talking about entitlements. So it's not that same kind of divisive behavior wasn't happening in 2020. It was. And I still think those that side on the side of inclusion, you know, it's certainly not in my role as CEO of Rise do I endorse any candidates or any party. But I more look at who is talking about inclusion, who is promoting policies that will make us a more inclusive country, who will continue the progress. Because the truth is, the country has made great progress. People are confused about our inclusion at the beginning of this country. About 6%, right, of the population could vote when we began this country. You had to be white, you had to be male, you had to own property. Over the course of time, all of those things have been overturned. So we are moving in the right direction, and I think we still are. I'm not that worried about the dog whistles and the exclusive language because it's nothing new. The real question is, what will Americans do? And so Rise, we do our part. We put a lot of work in 2020, even though the world was on lockdown. A lot of work in, and I'm super proud of the sports community. We worked with a lot of high profile athletes. I talk about Patrick Mahomes in this instance, just super excited that we were able to work with him, and he took a stance and he stood where he believed. And it wasn't who you were gonna vote for. It was that you need to vote. If we are Americans, we need to take part in this democracy. We need to own our own responsibility and understanding that we need to make that more accessible for as many people as possible. And so when you have athletes not only sending a message, but also saying, okay, how do I promote inclusion? You know, that Arrowhead Stadium was a voting place for the first time ever in history in 2020, was a part of not only Patrick, but other folks, other Chiefs on the team and the Chiefs organization. They had to put in a lot of work with the state of Missouri to make that happen. And so we're looking at actions and people's behaviors. The only other thing I will say, and I'm sorry for this super long answer, is Rise believes, and we work really hard to look at folks' behaviors. I think behaviors matter. But I will say the vast majority of our efforts go towards evolving people's thoughts and evolving people's attitudes. We believe that that is what drives sustainable behavior. I am not interested in policing people. I'm not interested in smacking people on the hand when they do things wrong. I would rather that your thoughts and your attitudes led you to inclusive behavior, no matter who was watching. And so a lot of our work is focused on that, even as we do now measure behaviors and keep track of them. And what are the behaviors that we see that's coming from these learnings?
Dan, I love everything that you're saying. And when it comes to topics like this, I do think that it's an area where Rise has a lot of experience leading the conversation. And so, you know, Rise held its 8th annual Super Bowl Critical Conversation on February 8th, where an esteemed panel of guests moderated by Stephen Weish of the NFL Network highlighted the urgency to have continued conversations and dialogue on action to address things like racism, diversity, inclusion, like you were just mentioning, within sports, but also beyond sports. Can you talk a little bit about what Critical Conversations is, why it was important to have that conversation with that panel on February 8th, and what some of the key takeaways were?
Yeah, absolutely. So Critical Conversations is another RISE program offering, and we have about four or five. It is our answer to there's not enough space for Americans to come together and have difficult conversations, to be able to disagree on topics, to be able to work through our disagreement, to be able to find places where we agree, and to come up with actual action plans based on that agreement, right? Mm-hmm. And so Critical Conversations for us is us helping to create that space. Sometimes they're called town halls. Sometimes they're called Critical Conversations. We do them at every level. You mentioned Steve is just an amazing, amazing friend of RISE. We do them when we have high profile people, but I will tell you, some of our best ones, I think, have been with teams, closed door. Some of our best ones have been with colleges, whole athletic departments. I still remember years ago being at Stony Brook. So that is what it's for. How do we have these difficult conversations? And the conversation can be around different topics, but it's always around inclusion. I will say the particular conversation we had on February 8th was really important because at that time, and still now, I suspect the numbers are higher now, we had 23 states that had legislation that was pushing to criminalize DEI and DEI education. I think obviously those legislations to me are, I think they're anti-American. I think they're anti-patriotic. I think that we seek to control. I'm a lawyer by training. I know you're sitting at, you know, Notre Dame Law School. And I think to seek to control what folks can be taught, if you're teaching someone critical thinking, they can accept what you're teaching or not. But to control what is put in front of them is inherently, to me, un-American. And so I think that we have 23 states that are literally saying, you can't use a word like privilege. What does it mean that as a country, we can't use a word and we don't think like our young people can think critically enough to process whether they agree or disagree with a single word? Are you kidding me? And so for us, that conversation on February 8th was one of our direct responses to what I see as really un-American behavior going on across this country. We have always moved forward because we've had critical thinkers. We have always moved forward because we have folks who think differently. You know, and this is not only in race issues, right? You can go back to like, look at our exploration in space. Literally, we have one of the most loved presidents in the country, all right, in the history of this country, John F. Kennedy, talking about we just had to go to the moon because it hadn't been done before. We need to do it. Mm-hmm. Like, we come from a country of expansive thinking, not a country of telling people not to think. And so that critical conversation was us putting a stake in the ground that said, whether 23 states or more are seeking to stop people from thinking and talking and thinking about inclusion and thinking about diversity and thinking about equity, even if they're saying it, we will not stop saying it, and we will not stop having these conversations, and we won't stop having them on the highest platforms that we can possibly have them on.
What you're saying is so important, and it really makes me think of the need that there is to, I don't know, take back the meaning of our words. You know, DEI, those distinct words, diversity, equity, and inclusion, in some ways have been co-opted and rebranded in this really negative, pejorative way that I think hurts a really positive mission that we're trying to push forward.
I agree. I think there are other words. I think even now I will say RISE does not register folks to vote. But as I mentioned before, one of the ways athletes have told us they want to use their platform is to encourage people to vote. We are even seeing the politicalization of that. Like, when in the world has it been partisan to encourage people to vote? Right? Like, we have gone down a road, and either we can accept that we've gone down this road, or we can fight. And so Rise is in the fight mode.
Diane, something that oftentimes transcends boundaries of race, gender, sexual identity, political party is team loyalty. And when fans and players focus on their common identity as part of a team or a fan base, they can create an environment where things like racial differences begin to fade into the background in favor of the diverse collective identity that gets formed around the team.
Absolutely.
How do you think the collective identity formed around shared allegiances to sports teams can help bridge racial divides and create more inclusive environments?
Well, you mentioned earlier critical conversations. We have gotten the kind of shut up and dribble response, like, why are you doing this here? In part, we have critical conversations. You said February 8th, but the truth is we had it February 8th in Vegas because the Super Bowl was there. We tend to have these critical conversations when the larger ones around the time of sporting events, because we think we can leverage that connectivity, that allegiance to sport and that allegiance to team to move the needle. So we think what you're talking about is the truth. If you can believe it or not, I actually was reading a study years ago that Fox Sports actually put out. And they literally have quantified the connectivity that comes from cheering for the same team. So we seek to leverage that reality in that particular program offering. It is often why we are having certain conversations at certain times and in certain places. It's real. And I don't think that is a negative, although it can be used negatively about human behavior.
Mm. I really love that idea of using sports in this way, because it just, to me, seems to give so much freedom and flexibility for people to see each other beyond their identity in a way that you can't always do when you're existing and having these conversations strictly along identity-based lines, right? Because our identities are fixed variables in our lives. I can't change the color of my skin. I can't change how, the fact that I identify as a man, a cisgender man, you know, these are things that are just part of my identity. But if I move from, Miami to Chicago, I can, say, well, I was wearing a Heat jersey. Maybe now I'm going to be wearing a Bulls jersey. And maybe that just can open up an entire space for me to engage with people who are different from me on all other levels.
Yeah, I love that. You know, we, at our core, Rise is an educational organization. And one of the modules we often start with is identity. One of the things we start with, you touched on, Max, which is our race is one aspect of any individual's identity. And one that folks could lead with. You could choose to lead with it or not. We also talk about the concept of surface identifiers. Most of the ways we would identify ourselves, people would not see externally. You might see that I'm a cisgender woman. You might see my race. But most of the other ways I would identify myself is not surface. You wouldn't see it unless we engage with one another. And so a lot of our teaching, we start there, and a lot of it is founded on how do we create, right, the world where folks don't have to leave any of their identifiers behind. Right? How do we create that space? And so we are, when we say our mission is to educate and empower the sports community to eliminate racism, we are really doing it by how do we create that space where folks don't have to leave any of their identifiers behind?
Hmm. And it looks like you're also creating that space with younger generations, which I think is a really important thing. So I want to talk about some of the work that Rise does with young people in sports. In 2023, you all brought together two boys high school soccer teams located in Michigan, And one team was from a high school in Detroit called Cass Tech, and the other was from Plymouth High School in Plymouth. And the teams were from racially and economically disparate backgrounds. So one community was a bit more economically wealthy and predominantly white. The other one was a lower income community and it was predominantly Black. And even though those teams had never played against each other before, you brought them together on multiple occasions, not just to compete, but also to empower them to learn about one another's experiences and become leaders in promoting social change. You know, so those boys, and I watched the video, it was beautiful, they forged friendships with one another. They challenged their biases. They developed skills to advocate for equality and justice on and off of the soccer field.
Yep.
What was the inspiration behind that program? And what were some of the most impactful moments and outcomes from the from the interactions?
Yeah, so one, I thank you so much. I watched that Cass Tech Plymouth video and then moved year after year. I'm also excited to say NFL Network just ran a... I want to say it's a story today because it's on our IG. I think it came out on Rise's IG account today. Ran a story. We run a similar program with the Rams in LA. So for us, I mentioned earlier this multi-week programming that we do with youth. Cass Tech in Plymouth is an example of that. We believe that bringing young folks together multiple times, it really can't be a one-off. It has to be a concerted multiple interaction, year over year of possible experience. Our goal, quite honestly, and Generation Z excites me, I guess we'll be running into Generation Alpha too, is that some of these conversations we're having just will seem silly. And I will honestly say, in working with Generation Z, some of these conversations we're having as Generation X and older just seems silly to them. And that is what we are aiming for. Because we know if you bring different people that are different with those, again, those surface identifiers together, they see it as just that. And then you are able to move beyond it. Not see it because it is there. We don't believe, quite honestly, Roz, you know, we get a lot of pushback. I don't really believe in colorblindness. I think you should see my color. And I think that's great. Like, I don't understand why you couldn't see my color and connect with me as well. Right. So we see our work with young people. We do it multi-week. We do it across the country. Our goal this year is to have, I believe, 70 multi-week programs going on across the country. I always have to shout out Under Armour. Right now, they are the supporter of our biggest supporter of getting that work done across the country. They fund us doing that work in 13 cities. So that's 10 sessions in 13 cities, two times every year. So 20 weeks, 20 in 13 cities every year. And again, across the country. And we just believe if you bring young people together over their multi-week, we have six sure topics we're talking about. We're talking about power and privilege. We're talking about bias. We're talking about identity. We're talking about diversity concepts. We often have folks talking about race and they really don't even have the same definition for the word, right? Mm-hmm. So let's start there and let's make sure we're all talking about the same thing. And then we have six corresponding skills that we really think folks need to build. And a lot of time with our youth programs, we are sincerely believing if we build certain skills and develop certain skills in this population, some of these issues we won't have. So for us, those skills are reflection, critical thinking, perspective taking, active listening, leadership, and teamwork. If we can build those skills and we can teach on those topics with someone young enough, we just believe we're going to make tomorrow better than today. You know, that is the bulk. It may not have the biggest price tag, although it's pretty big. The bulk of our work and our staff is focused on making sure that those multi-week programs are happening. So it's got a little less flash, but we think it is absolutely as important. And we've had great examples. You know, I mentioned Rise with the Rams. This is the seventh year we've done this. Every year we have brought diverse high schools together. I'm super proud to say this is the first year that we brought girls in because there are girls flag football teams now. And so we're super excited because this has typically been done with boys teams across various areas of Los Angeles. And then the last thing I will say is another type of diversity for us is also law enforcement and community members. And so sometimes those are the diverse groups that we are bringing together to do the same work. And we think that is incredibly important.
Having these conversations, I do think really helps, especially when we're having them with younger people and we're able to get them at those formative years where they can understand that you can see color and that seeing color can be something that can actually open you up to have more freedom to engage with people.
Yeah. And it's hard to pick one story, you know. Now I've come to expect, I want to hear by the end, I've heard so many young people say, I never would have met this person. And we are so similar. And they can see the distinction between what they're like at the top of the program. They talk about, we came in, we sat with our team, we weren't talking to one another. And by the end of the program, right, by the end of the sixth, seventh, eighth week, you're sitting with the folks that are like you. You're sitting with the folks that you have common interests with. And not necessarily the folks you're on the team with or the folks that look like you. And so I've come to just, I feel blessed that I come to just expect that. And I get to see that and I get to be motivated by that. I will also say at a recent RISE board meeting, and I got a pretty high level board, you know, they've seen a lot of things. They've seen almost everything. But I will say so many of them were really moved. We had a program leader in LA talking about building bridges through basketball there. And a cop and a student talked about the family was pulled over. And literally the cop was like, oh, you're like so-and-so from the program. We do the program together. And listening right to the young person talk about being able to be the person, like the entire experience, the stress level just decreased. Right. And everybody walks away safe was just truly, truly moving. And so we know we can bridge divides.
That brings me to the next topic that I want to talk about with you, which is this idea that sports, while it has the unique power to bring people together, can also sometimes create divisions, particularly evident in the way that fans can sometimes turn to racism against Black players. Example, when a team loses or if a player takes a stance that they disagree with. The examples that come to mind for me are one, Colin Kaepernick taking the knee during the national anthem and the backlash he received there, or two, and I'm not sure if you've seen this before, but in certain parts of Europe, for example, when European football players who are Black are getting praised by the white fan base, but then they'll lose. Right, when they win, but when they lose, they get attacked with all of these this racialized backlash against those same people that were previously praising them. So how do we combat that issue of conditional acceptance and make sure that the respect and value for Black athletes doesn't extend just to when they're on the field and they're winning, but it extends to a respect and a value for Black lives?
Yeah, I think that is the hardest part. It is why we do the fan engagement. It is one of the reasons we do the fan engagement. When we talk about identity, it is hard for us to take these superheroes that we have made of athletes and see them as people who are at work, right? Like, this is the gosh honest truth, is there are people who are at work. And while we all understand the need to have a safe workplace, we just don't necessarily think of these athletes at work. And it is what it is, and they deserve to be protected. So I think the first line of defense is when I'm talking to leadership at the leagues, they have to understand that this is work and you have to protect these people because these are your employees. The second line of defense is how do we educate the fan so that they see folks, as they see these players as full people. You are literally defining them as one thing. They are professional athletes, and they're professional athletes that are there to entertain you. But they are people. They have their right to their own thoughts. They have their right to their own opinions. And so we feel like the fan work is really important because of that. So we've got to do that education piece. And then the last line is, you know, something I say to professional athletes, I would say the second to last thing I say to professional athletes is, you are the people who should be used to things maybe not being simple and not being easy. Mm. And so this is not simple and it is not easy. And this is something you're going to have to continue to educate people on. And that's tough. I'm not saying it because it's an easy thing and they have to do it. I'm just saying it like it's the truth. Mm. So I think there are a lot of things. And then lastly, I would say we seek to support other organizations who are doing it. We just reposted and we're pushing along a campaign called Macaco, to your point. It is a Brazilian-based organization who is seeking to combat the same issues. And so we are always trying to, how do we engage and support other organizations who are really more focused in that area?
Hmm. Yeah, your point about the critical importance of humanizing the athlete, I think that that is so significant. And what it makes me think of too, so at Notre Dame, we have this program across the university called Show Some Skin. And it's a program where different people, whether they're students, faculty, staff, anonymously submit monologues that they've written about their life experiences on campus. And they find, so there's a cohort of actors who will randomly be assigned these different, you know, anonymous scripts, and then they'll perform them for the campus to witness. And yeah, it's a great program. And there was one Show Some Skin skit that I saw where it was it was a young black man playing a black college student at Notre Dame who wasn't a football player. You know, we have a huge football program and it's got all of this attention, so we have a lot of fans for it. But he was trying to draw the distinction between himself and a friend of his who was on the football team. And he talks about this encounter where they ran into a group of Notre Dame fans who weren't black, and they were so excited to meet the two of them, and they thought that they were both on the football team. And when they realized that only one was and the other one wasn't, the tone that he felt shift in the way that he was being looked at and the way that he was being talked to compared to his friend. And it just all of a sudden really sank in, this idea of what's being valued here is not the person, it's the stature, the position of being a football player. And if I'm not a black man who's a football player here, then where is my value here in your eyes?
Right. And the flip side of that, I mean, that's troubling, but I'm so excited that the young man was able to express that, to understand that, right? Like when I talk about the skills that Rise seeks to build and develop, is critical thinking. The ability to think about that, reflect on that, and share that, those are skills that I think are necessary because we're all not going to make the right moves all the time. So what do you do in the face of someone making a very wrong move? And so we need to develop these skills to be able to do that. The flip side of that really, I think, goes back to what you were talking about before, which is the young man who was the football player. How do they really see him? Like, the truth is they see him as pretty one-dimensional. And if he then makes a move that they don't agree with, you get the horrible name calling, right? You get what happened to Colin Kaepernick. Like, it's problematic on both sides. It's problematic for the person who's not valued because the only thing we can value is that you play football. But it's also problematic for the person you value because they play football, because that is, again, just one piece of their identity. Mm-hmm. You know, you're really not leaving that much space. There probably are all types of biases and assumptions you've made about the young man that plays football.
Mm-hmm.
So, right, you've done it to both of them.
One of the things I think is really great that Rise does to help build empathy and humanize the athlete is your Walk in Their Shoes video series, which I just think is a powerful tool for helping to understand and share personal stories of athletes and leaders. Can you talk about what the inspiration was behind the Walk in Their Shoes videos and tell our leaders what that even is and how you think it's helping to contribute to this idea of humanizing athletes and promoting inclusion? Yeah.
Well, we are always looking for folks to help us promote these stories because we think the power of storytelling is just immense. But as you know, we live in a very noisy world. And so we need as much help as possible to get these wonderful stories to the forefront. The truth is, Stephen Ross, I was not CEO when Rise was developed. And, you know, Stephen Ross, who is the owner, primary majority owner of the Miami Dolphins, they have run into a really challenging situation. And so in some part, Rise comes out of Stephen coming to folks who are leaders in this space and saying, eliminating racism is important to me. What can we do? And so much of Rise came out of those initial conversations, and he has been a constant supporter in so many ways. Walk in Their Shoes is now literally the second part of that Champions of Change I mentioned. Road to Progress is first, right? You get this historic perspective, and then you get Walk in Their Shoes, because let's take all these facts and let's take this history and let's bring stories to it. Let's make it real. Let's build that empathy. And I am just so honored when a community that, you know, to a conversation we just had knows that there is some challenge with being vulnerable, with being open. There is a chance, right, that you will cause problems more than you like to deal with, has chosen to be open, chosen to be honest. And so we often ask questions about what is your interaction? I often think of Wallace Spearman Jr., former Olympian, who now works at USATF, talking about he was pulled over and the officer was talking about, you know, smoking weed. And Wallace was like, I'm the only person like that didn't even know what he was talking about. I like literally never engage in this behavior. Right. This is a guy who's been an Olympic athlete, which, you know what that means before he became an Olympian. He's working, he's training, he's focused. He's like, I'm like the person that doesn't even know what he's talking about, but I am the person that they are looking at the most. And so those really open and honest conversations have been moving for folks. It is we want to create empathy. We want the person that has experienced that to know that it is not you. Even folks who everyone thinks is great are experiencing this as well. So the bias is in the other person. It is not inherently in you or anything you're doing wrong. And we want folks that engage in it, these behaviors, to be reflective. We wanna say, if you're thinking critically, would you do the same things you're doing? Would you make the same moves you're making? Would you ask the same questions you're asking of the people you're asking? And so, you know, we have found Walk in Their Shoes to do that. And one of the things I don't think that I've mentioned is Rise is really focused on engaging every community. And we firmly believe that this work has got to be done with folks of different races together. So I think some of our most powerful Walk in Their Shoes they come from white people, right? And they talk about race. And they talk about, you know, we've had a broadcaster who talks about the first time she ever really thought about race is she was sitting there at a camp and this little Black girl was just so honored that she would do something for her. And it suddenly became clear to her. Like, she's like, I hadn't thought about race until that moment. And this is a little girl who always thinks about race. She's just a little girl and she's already thinking about it. And so we think the Walk in Their Shoes is just amazing because folks can connect on a very personal level, you know? And I think that goes a longer way sometimes than lectures and even some of the sessions, but we think the sessions are important after you've had that moment to be reflective. Now you need to have the tools and you need to develop the skills to be inclusive.
Then given how politics and the independent media have really raised the salience of race and racism in society. Does Rise ever receive pushback when it tries to confront some of these really critical topics? And what does that look like?
Every day. It's like, you know, half of my job, I've got a great team, right? And when we think about, you know, we talk about everybody's on the bus, is supposed to be on the bus, and they're in the right seat in the bus, which means they're playing the correct role. Part of my role, right, is helping to deflect. It looks like shut up and dribble. It looks like, why are you here? We have a really deep relationship with NASCAR. And so sometimes we literally have champions of change up at NASCAR racing events. So you can imagine there are folks that are questioning, why are we even there? So it looks like that. It looks like the legislations that I talked to you about. There are states that we are actually providing services in that we have to think about, what do we call our sessions? It looks like not being able to use the word privilege in educational opportunities. So it looks very different. It looks like personal conversations, but it looks like legislation. It looks like folks saying, Diane, we really want to work with you, but they don't come through and they don't actually schedule RISE programming. It looks a lot of different ways, and it requires us to be savvy and be ready to address all of those things.
And so another program that RISE has developed in conjunction with the Super Bowl is Representation Matters, which is a half-day experience, you know, for sports professionals that addresses the call for diversity in sports business. With that in mind, the NFL has, you know, seen historic increases recently in the hiring of minority head coaches this year, bringing the total to, I think, 9, including Atlanta's Raheem Morris, New England's Jared Mayo, Las Vegas's Antonio Pierce, Pittsburgh's Mike Tomlin, you know, Tampa Bay's Todd Brown, just to name a few. How do you view this milestone in the context of the Rooney Rule and the broader efforts to promote diversity within the league?
You know, I had the privilege of Paul Tagliabue, who was the commissioner when the Rooney Rule was enacted. And he and Dan Rooney really were the drafters, the creators of the Rooney Rule. And so I had the privilege of Paul being board co-chair when I came on, and then board chair. And so I really got to work with him closely for 4 years. And it was great to hear Paul say the Rooney Rule was right then. And what has the NFL had to find its answer for now, right? Because this is ever evolving. And so I think this criticism of the Rooney Rule is amazing. I think the criticism of how it has either been enacted or not enacted is really important, because it has led, right? Not so much that it is important that it led to the increase in the numbers of Black coaches, but it is more that it led to the league and the folks who are the decision makers, the league, the franchise owners saying, okay, it's time for us to reflect and figure out what we need to do. What do we need to address? What needs to happen? You know, I always remember Paul talking about the rule was important, but then the league had to create different opportunities for folks like Herm Edwards to get in front of all the franchise owners prior to at different points in the annual cycle of the business before you're making a decision about who to hire as your coach. So the rule is important, but it is also about what is your investment leading up to what the rule covers. And I think what we see is the NFL doing that reflective piece, and we are seeing some of the results of that. Putting in the work. My current board co-chair is Troy Vincent, who's the EVP of football operations at the NFL. They're putting in a lot more work and being really strategic about things with the decision makers. And so, you know, I think the criticism of the rule and the criticism of the outcomes in recent years has been really important to requiring the organization to go back and be more reflective. And so, you know, I like where we are now. Let's see where it leads. We're certainly, I don't think anybody in any business in America would say we have arrived and we are finished what we have to do. But I think that folks care about it, that folks are not only saying they care about it, but are doing something, are making moves, being more reflective or moving differently, I think it bodes well, and we'll see where we end up.
Mm. I agree with you, and I definitely think that it's an area that's really important, because the idea of the Rooney Rule, you know, requiring this diverse slate of candidates, is something that was then adopted by a lot of employers and industries outside of sports. And so there's an area here, there's a lane for the progress that's being made to be a model for what other people can do too. And I think that part of that progress started because they were recognizing that people were getting Rooney ruled in a bad way, you know, just being brought in so that you can say that you had a diverse slate and then not actually being able to get beyond that point. And so we've seen, I think, a few incentives created to encourage these teams to really get across that line when it comes to acknowledging and advancing the talent that you do have among high performing leaders of color in sports business.
Yeah, I think, listen, I'm excited. I will say, I will big up another board member. The other board co-chair is Pete Vivacqua, who is sitting at Notre Dame. He is just an amazing champion of this work. He's a Notre Dame alum, and he heads the athletic department. And, you know, we have conversations, right? Folks talk about professional sports, but if we look at the pipeline and we look at things critically, collegiate sports and the head coaching numbers are dismal, right? I think as of March of this year, we had 16 out of 134 NCAA football head coaches were of color, right? Like, we got some work to do on the collegiate level. It's not to say that it's a direct pipeline, but it is to say that we have, it's not just professional sports, and we can only hope that what's done in the professional space will also impact other spaces.
Diane, are there any other initiatives that RISE is working on right now that you think would be helpful for our listeners to know about?
We talked about RISE to Vote, but I do want to talk about it a little bit more explicitly. I thank you for that question. We know that we're coming down to an important year. I think, you know, as I said before, what's most important is that Americans take part, right? That is what democracy is. That we have to fight for Americans to take part fully is one challenge. But whether or not we do take part, those of us who can, is another challenge. And so RISE is trying to help work on both. And so I would say, you know, if folks have time, please feel free. We have been posting for the past month or so facts about elections, facts about registrations, links to websites where you can go and make sure that you are registered to vote. I think obviously this is a really important year. I think I would love to be able to say in a year's time, the way I'm able to talk about the election of 2020 and having such a vast turnout, I'd love to be able to say that a year from now about the election of 2024. That Americans showed up and we took our democracy seriously. And so I do think that is something that we really spend a lot of energy on, because we have had a lot of athletes say this is important to them. And listen, we've had some who have said it's not important to them. I will have to really give almost all of the leagues credit, because they have made it an important topic so that the professional athlete can either say they're interested or not interested, but the leagues have made it available to them to be able to make that decision. And so I really credit them with that. And so I do think it's worth mentioning, because it's just so important to, it impacts everything. Often when we're having sessions, it's not only about, are you registered? We realize we need to have real conversations about why should you register and why should you vote. And when we talk about these 23 states that have legislation either pending or have passed that's criminalizing DEI. These are your state legislatures. This is elections. If you don't like it, get out there and vote those people out. If you like it, I guess vote for more of them. But either way, make your voice heard.
How can people who want to get more involved support RISE and the work that you're doing there?
So tons of ways. One of my other really important jobs is fundraising. And so I will say this, it is really important to us. I think folks see our board and think we are set, and we are not. Our board is great. I have over 80% board giving. They are in it and they are good partners. But we need the public. And I mean, you could go on to risetowin.org. You can go look for us at Rise to Win at any handle in social media. The $5, the $10, the $100, the $200 gift is huge. It makes a difference. This is a complex problem, and we have a lot of work ahead of us. Easiest way for folks, if you're busy, to help is to donate to us, and we really, really appreciate it all. And then we need folks, if you don't have the funds, but social media, you can go to, I really am proud of our presence in social media, but the power of it is about who shares it and who expands it. And so we really appreciate that. And I think some of the stronger, the harder lifts rather are, if we can partner with you, we want to partner with you. We love sitting down with organizations and saying, let's figure out what you need and let's figure out how we can be a good partner in that space. That is really, really important to us. Though that's the most important thing. And, you know, but that drives expenses. So then I've got to raise some money to be able to do that with everyone. And so I would say those are the three top ways that we love to have folks involved.
And last question for you before I let you go. So as you mentioned, the Olympics just started on Friday. Obviously, we want to secure wins in every area that we can, but where are you hoping specifically that we'll take the gold?
You know, I mentioned two women's names earlier. I'm always, you mentioned the name. So one, I am always a fan of Max and USA Track and Field. I think it is just such a wonderful organization. There have been so many people there from Wallace Spearman Jr., Justin Gatling, Aretha Thurman. I just find them to be a wonderful organization. So I'm looking for as many goals as possible from USA Track and Field for sure. I am Team Simone. I just think this is such a wonderful young woman. I think for her to stand in her strength and her truth, to address mental health issues, to say she's still a winner, even with folks coming at her and trying to define strength for her. I am always looking for her to win. And in my head, she can never lose. And then I always want to see, I would say outside of that, have come to learn a lot about swimming, more than I knew before. Former Olympian Natalie Hines has done some work with RISE. So I'm looking at Katie Ledecky. I just wish her the best. I think she's amazing. And so I don't know. I've got 1,000 folks that I cheer for. And I got to tell you, the basketball games, men and women's, it is awesome. It's like a dream come true. So we can't lose.
It's also a really amazing time. I mean, you know, in sports in general, there tend to be people who do really well, but it's a really amazing time for Black women in sports right now. I mean, Coco Gauff, Simone Biles, Sha'Carri Richardson.
I can't believe I forgot Coco.
Yeah, Coco. She's out here. Yeah. So it's just, you know, bring home the gold.
Yeah. And as I got up there in age, let me tell you, sometimes I also relate to the older people too, even though they're not that old. But I was excited to see Nadal win in his doubles. You know what I mean? Excited to see LeBron. He's killing it. And, you know, he's not the youngest person out there. So I can't believe I forgot Coco. But I do think it is such a wonderful moment for Black female athletes. And I don't think that takes away. I hope it doesn't take away from anyone else. I think just to be an Olympian is amazing. I don't I get so upset when folks take any shine off of anyone who achieves that. And I can be excited for Black women and how we are showing up in that space. It brings me joy.
Absolutely. Diane Billings is CEO of the Ross Initiative in Sports for Equality, better known as RISE. RISE is a national nonprofit that harnesses the unifying power of sports to combat racism and promote social justice across communities in the United States. Diane, it's been such a pleasure getting to talk to you. Thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for joining me on the DEI podcast.
Max, it has been a pleasure. Thank you.
The DEI podcast at Notre Dame Law School is produced by Notre Dame Studios. Every episode, we sit down with important voices in law, culture, society, and business to talk about issues that touch all of us. If you liked what you heard today, become a subscriber and get notified every time we upload an episode. And tune in next time for another great conversation on issues that touch us all. Until then, take care.